a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Paul Gallant.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
The most interactive sports radio show in Houston.
Paul, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the devastation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
And Altuve sends one high, sends one deep, sends one into the Boston Knight. 13-4. Hit number four for Jose Altuve, and he hits for the cycle.
There it is. Needed the big one. Got it.
Yeah, kid. That was a Boston massacre. How do you like them apples?
It's nice to see the Astros hitting at the rate they're hitting. It's not sustainable, but the last three games, holy crap. 39 runs, 57 hits. And you saw Jose Altuve get his first ever career cycle last night. Yordan Alvarez goes yard. He has four hits of his own. And the 13-4 victory last night has me feeling very strongly about this take. We all agree the Astros won the World Series last year due to their pitching. You had the top shelf talent in the rotation. You had a bullpen play out of its ass. They were incredible. And you got enough offense. But it wasn't that much. Took a look back at the score totals for every game through the playoffs. They averaged 4.07 runs a game, which was down from the regular season average of 4.55.
Ooh, Paul's using numbers and statistics to make a point instead of going with his gut.
Yes. Yes, I am, Sean Mapes. I am a mathematician.
Wait, why is that my voice?
I don't know.
Why is...
Huh? Listen, I need to fight.
That's not how I talk.
I need to push back against the people that always think I'm a baseball dummy, because generally, they're correct. I'm just using you as a straw man to make a point, okay?
Paul, whatever you say. Keep giving me the numbers.
You sound like Droopy Dog from Hanna-Barbera cartoons back in the day. This year, it's different, right? With the Astros going into, hopefully, the playoffs. And I would point to yet another night from Christian Javier where it became a struggle for him to locate his pitches to challenge hitters. And he doesn't go that long. Luckily, Jose Urquidy had his day out of the rotation. He comes in and he cleans stuff up. It's different this year because I just don't have a great feeling that the pitching is going to get back to this point. So I'm wondering how much of this recent offense is sustainable. Obviously, 39 runs and 57 hits over three games. That's effing insane. And it's really awesome to see. And honestly, you go back to their last eight games, they've scored seven or more runs in five of those games. We can't even make jokes about saving runs for the next night anymore. That's kind of cool, right? Like, we don't want to make that joke. Just seemed to be a weird phenomenon with the Astros, Sean, where after they score a ton of runs, the next night, they don't score any.
Yeah, no, it's definitely better to, like, not make that joke. To have it not be a case where, well, if they score a lot of runs, you know, they're going to score no runs coming up. It is nice that they can score a lot of runs and then the next day come back and score a lot of runs again.
Yeah.
That to me, I know you're a baseball savant, that to me is a positive.
I agree
with
you.
You can score a lot of runs a lot.
It's a bold take, but I agree with you here, Sean.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll take all the arrows together from all the haters.
Who think we don't know baseball.
Yeah.
We are baseball mensas here.
A couple seam heads.
We like runs. Not those kind of runs.
No.
like the poor Notre Dame podcaster who crapped himself. Look up that video. He definitely pooped himself.
Yeah, he has some response video out now, lying, saying that it was I forgot what he said. Like his calves cramped up or something.
Okay, we're gonna dive into this with our first college football six pack at 11:15 further. But you're so right, man. Don't call attention to it. Yeah. Just deny. You don't deny. You just ignore and move on with your life. Or you embrace it and you become famous because you embraced it. Now you're everyone's
poopy pants Notre Dame podcaster. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Let's bring it back to the Astros.
We'll have more on that later.
More on the pooping Notre Dame podcaster later. But I know pitching wins championships. I'm convinced, though, that a deep Astros run is going to come because the offense is able to play at a rate. Not quite, of course, the last three games. 9 runs, 14 hits on Saturday. 17 runs, 25 hits on Sunday. 13 runs, 18 hits last night. Like, that's obviously not going to happen.
But imagine if it did.
Oh, it would be amazing. If they truly became a Death Star and are just running up the score on people, that would be perfect.
Ideal. Yeah. Especially, like I said, you want to score a lot of runs, a lot.
So right.
That would go into that.
Especially if it ends with them doing this to either the Dodgers or Braves. Because that is the cherry on top of this run is vengeance. Vengeance against the Dodgers for talking any trash. Stop having fans stab other people in parking lots. Clean up your own house. Homeless problem of California. I don't know why I turned it into that. And then on top of that, Atlanta, we got to get vengeance for not just this past World Series, but also basically an entire two-decade run where the Braves just owned the Astros. Except for that one time, I know, there was the one series where the Astros did take advantage of it. But, I mean, it's a totality thing with the Braves. It would be great if it wrapped up with them scoring 13 runs a game in a playoffs against the Braves. That's not going to happen. But can they get a modicum of this offense? Can they get a bit of this? Is this something that's actually somewhat sustainable? I don't know. I do not know the answer to that. I love that Altuve had 4 hits last night. I love that Yordan had 4 hits last night. I love that we've seen Jeremy Peña hitting better of late. Alex Bregman's been hitting better of late. Actually, Kyle Tucker's kind of slumping. Hell, Jose Abreu hit a home run and he almost had a grand slam. Not that, you know, a little bit later. That poor Bear Claw guy, my God. Like, Alex Cora, we know you're a cheater and a possible alcoholic because of that one story that was in The Athletic about how he almost got in a fight with Jeff Blum because Blum was telling him to turn the music down while he was trying to call his family during a hurricane. Alex Cora leaving that guy out against this Astros offense was kind of mean, and maybe that's why they were able to get as many runs as they did. But is this sustainable? That's my question to you. Is some degree of this sustainable? I think it has to be if they are going to win the World Series. This has nothing to do with the stretch run. If you've been listening to me, you know that I'm 10 out of 10 confident. Said it with Josh Beard yesterday. 10 out of 10 confident that they are going to win the AL West. I still strongly believe it. I think anyone wavering right now is low-key soft. This Astros schedule down the stretch is easier than that of the Mariners, and I would say of Texas as well. So they should be able to win the West. But winning the World Series, it's always pitching, right? I don't know if the pitching is capable of doing it this year. Someone brought up a little bit ago when I mentioned the issues that Christian Javier had. They said, well, at first he wasn't bad. You're right, Dusty Baker said that. But then, of course, that inning happened again. He's not at the level where he was throwing an effing no-hitter in the World Series last year, or at least helping them get to a no-hitter in the World Series last year.
Yeah, and last year, like you said, was a lot of one-run, two-run games where the Astros just had enough offense. And really, it was the pitching, especially the bullpen, that just did not allow a run.
Nothing.
In the postseason.
Right.
But you contrast that with the 2017 Astros, that was a much more offense-first squad.
Oh, yeah. Game 5 against the Dodgers in the World Series.
Yeah, that team was, they just would try to outscore you and really just try to survive until they could get it to the 9th inning. It's basically what the entire game plan was. Their best relievers that year were Charlie Morton and Lance McCullers, who would relieve each other's starts, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there is, like, the blueprint for the Astros, like, not just for any team to do this, but specifically for the Astros to win like this. It's just a matter of can, like you said, some of this hot hitting sustain itself.
And it's hard to say yes when it's this productive. Someone on the text line from the 409 said, don't get excited about all the hits and runs as they came against bum pitchers and position players. Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox are the worst defensive team I've ever seen in my life. Still, they were this bad last year, and their pitching was not good, and they left that poor Bear Claw guy out there a really long time. Chris Sale, is he still good? All I think about when I think about Chris Sale is not what a dominant pitcher he is. I think about a conversation that I once had on the radio in Seattle when someone asked if I thought I could kick Chris Sale's ass. Like, just point up, ask me that question. For no reason at all, I hadn't said anything leading, and I was like, he has no ass, so I think I'd have a choice, a chance. I think I have a choice. I think I have a chance. That was a Freudian slip, I guess. Anyway, okay. I mean, it might be that they're just going up against bums. Detroit certainly sucks. So
yeah, doing it against Detroit and Boston is different than doing against Atlanta, Dodgers, and I'd even throw Seattle in there too.
Boston does theoretically have a pulse, though. They did not seem to have much of one last night, and it was kind of interesting to see them zooming in on Alex Cora, whose eyes were watery, as Bearclaw... What? I'm not alleging anything. While Bearclaw was out there, the AT&T Sportsnet camera crews did a great job of cycling through the reaction to leaving Bearclaw in there. They zoomed into, was it Verdugo in the outfield who was like looking back at the bullpen and noticed no one was warming up? They zoomed in on the bullpen and they were all talking to each other. A-plus job by the producer of that broadcast. Seriously, that was very well done. And then Todd and Jeff started talking about it. And I was like, yeah, they must. I mean, that team is still in the race. Cora kind of screwed them over last night as far as their chances to actually win that game, because it was back and forth until they just left Bearclaw in on an island to die.
Yeah, I don't know what their like bullpen rest situation is, or if they're like playing 20 straight games or something weird that happens in baseball where Alex Cora is trying to save his bullpen and like, hey, Bearclaw, you're just gonna have to grit through this one.
Yeah.
But it did seem weird, especially, like you said, when Alex Verdugo, when it seemed like the actual players on the Red Sox were like, wait, what's going on here? Like, it felt like someone was about to raise their hand and be like, please, let
they should have.
Please. I care about this Bearclaw guy. Have mercy on him.
It felt like one of those dramatic movie scenes.
It's a very Friday Night Lights, like, I'm gonna make you like run until you fall down, Taylor Kitsch.
But yeah, Riggins was drunk, so they have him bull in the ring, and they're just all destroying him for the entirety of that. Yeah, my favorite reference for that, similarly, Pulo fighting all these people in his trial by combat and just yelling 13 over and over again. R.I.P. Ray Stevenson. I felt bad for Bearclaw. And the Red Sox, I'd be pissed off if I were one of those players and that happened. That wasn't right. Put in a position player.
Also, when you, surely they have a Martin Maldonado laying around.
Yeah, so they can't use. Throw a 41-mile-per-hour slider. It's pretty low bar, guys.
Yeah, it's always kind of weird when you're like, yeah, we're just going to have to, you know, this guy's just going to have to grit through it to save the bullpen, and then for the rest of the series, everyone's available out the bullpen. It's like, well, if you start losing tomorrow, then it doesn't matter. Like, you just punted basically the first game in hopes that, like, well, maybe we can salvage the next two. And you don't know if that's going to be the case.
Yeah. Hoping that it'll be a Pyrrhic victory for the Astros because they used up all their runs again. One last text before we move to the next topic. We won't face any of these pitchers in the playoffs. And what did we do against the last playoff team? Don't get too excited. They haven't proven anything in terms of turning anything around. I'm not. I'm saying that the reality seems to be right now that if they win a World Series, it's going to be because the bats are on fire. I don't think the pitching is going to do it, especially when Christian Javier has another rough day like that. Someone on the Twitch suggested what I was going to suggest in the next segment. It might be time to move Javier to the bullpen. especially if he's starting off the game the way that he did, which was better, not great still. And then, of course, he has that awful inning, a couple of innings in. Like, it might be time to move him into that side of things. The Rangers, by the way, they almost lost to the Mets. They didn't quite lose, and the Mariners won, too. So the Astros still a game back as that AL West race is very, very tight. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Up next, cycles. Are they a big deal? Because Jose Altuve had his first one last night. And why aren't we talking about Jose Altuve's big night? We got another episode of Keep That Same Energy coming back at you. First, though, I got to tell you about my friends at mybookie.ag. Guys, football's here. College football's here. I wish I could have gambled on mybookie.ag on total pass attempts by Navy. Everyone was saying they were going to be a super pass-heavy team this year. All of a sudden, wrong. Even when they were getting their asses kicked, they kept running the football. Running clock in Ireland. How about that? It's time to get set up on MyBookie so you can make gambling on games, say, where Notre Dame is up 42-3 against a team that's going to run the triple option the whole game. You make it a little bit more fun for you. And MyBookie.ag, there's so many ways to bet on football, but you can also bet on baseball, too. I feel perhaps I'm still drinking a little bit too much Battle Red Kool-Aid. It might be laced with something because I said something crazy about the Texans in an online video for ESPN 97.5. You got to check that out. MyBookie.ag, though, is where you sign up. You get a sign-up bonus or a reload bonus if you're an existing customer, a referral bonus if you get a friend to sign up. So hop on to MyBookie.ag today. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. It's MyBookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're hooked up with it.
Toss a coin to your witcher.
Back to the Paul Gallant Show, coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
First pitch, swung on, drilled, deep to center field, all the way back near the wall. It is off the wall. Yadier Diaz is going to score. Jeremy Peña is going to score. Jose Altuve is going to get to third. Astros retake the lead. It is 5-4. Altuve, a two RBI triple.
Jose Altuve hit for the cycle last night. It's the first time he has ever hit for the cycle. And I'm not about to diminish what he did. This is a honest-to-God question. Is everyone's appreciation for the cycle based on the fluky nature of it? Because if you hit the absolute bejesus out of a ball, you have maybe a feel on where it's going to land, but you don't have much control over it. And you don't have control over the dimensions of the ballpark. Fenway Park is very favorable for weird-ass triples bouncing off that wall, making that loud noise that it does. You heard it right there. What is the reason for everyone's obsession with the cycle? It feels like one of those things that an obsessive, compulsive person would be into. And I'm not diminishing it. It's cool that he did it. It's crazy that he hadn't done it before. I've always wondered, though, why cycles are put on a pedestal that is similar to that of no-hitters and perfect games. It was interesting even hearing Julia Morales talk about that on the broadcast last night, where she said, I've never seen a cycle. I've seen a bunch of no-hitters, and I've always wanted to see a cycle. Sometimes when the cycle's happening, you don't even know it's happening.
Yeah, it is something where, you know, you kind of, I mean, the triple's the hardest part, obviously.
Right.
And so I guess that's what it is that there's so many players that just, like, without serious defensive incompetence, like, literally cannot get a triple. Like, they just can't do it. Like, Miguel Cabrera, love him to death. Probably, I can't imagine he has that many triples in his career. You know, David Ortiz, Albert Pujols. Actually, Pujols could run a little bit at the start, but it is like pretty rare. There's, I, what, 344 times in MLB history. So that's good, like a little less than three per. That was off the top of my head. Definitely not looking at Google right now. So that's about like three times a season, a little bit less. And then no hitters, there's 322 no hitters all time in MLB history. So they're about comparable as far as a hitter, I don't know, milestone, accolade, and a pitcher accolade.
Okay.
They're about equals. Perfect games, there's like 30 of them or something.
Right. Perfect games are extremely
rare. That's the highest
rare.
Of the high.
Right. And it's a perfect game.
Yeah.
It is a big deal when a perfect game happens. I have at times shaken my head, shrugged my shoulders at no-hitters. There was one by Johan Santana where he had like seven walks or something like that. And I remember when that happened, I sort of started to zag on no-hitters. And I'm like, no-hitters, are they that big of a deal? But clearly it's a difficult thing to do. It's a difficult thing to hit for a cycle. I've just always wondered why the cycle, because it just seems to be like one of these flukish things where in a four-hit night, a person just happens to have had a single, a double, a triple, and a home run, where a three-home run performance is, in my opinion, more impressive. Or a multiple double, multiple home run performance. Like, F that single. You know? Like, the single, if it was just about, like, doubles, triples, and home runs, cool. But, I don't know. It's weird that you also have to have the single to begin with. And that makes the accomplishment, I guess, that much more rare.
Okay, so there have been... Oh, wait, hold on. This was separated, and now I have to do math.
I will give you some math that
there's
somebody on the Twitch offered.
479 three home run games. So it's a little bit less.
But it's cooler. A three home run game is cooler.
No, I think the four home run though, that's like the rarest.
It's rare. I'm not diminishing it. I've just always wondered why people love it. A bunch of people, by the way, on the text line are saying that. Todd had no idea that was a cycle. Todd Callis on the call.
Oh, with the home run?
He of course he knew. He's a Syracuse grad, guys. He's a Syracuse grad. We're very smart people.
We can listen back to it, see. Because he definitely just did, like, it is far, it is gone. Home run, into the Boston night. Jose Altuve. Yeah, and then, like, you could hear someone in producer in his ear being like, Jose Altuve, the greatest Astro ever, Jose Altuve just hit for the cycle. Maybe
the first time.
Maybe mention that.
Yeah.
Maybe mention that.
By the way, talking about mentions, so Altuve hits for the cycle, which I thought was a big deal. Why the hell is that not on the front page of ESPN this morning? It wasn't. You know what was on the front page of ESPN? It's time for another episode of Keep That Same Energy.
Have you even slightly insulted the Houston Astros today?
If you don't know the facts, then you gotta chill.
We'll hunt you down, mother.
They are for Houston. They got Houston.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
We're keeping that same energy.
Now witness the firepower of this battle station.
You may fire when ready.
Alvarez. Drive center field.
Okay, so if you've listened to this show, you know that I have a deep appreciation for Seattle Mariners outfielder Julio Rodriguez. I interviewed him when he was 19. I thought he was awesome in that interview, especially considering he had just taught himself how to speak English not that long before. He was just a fun guy, and he's having an incredible stretch right now. And last night, yet again, he had four hits. But two things here. He didn't have a cycle like Jose Altuve did, a man who was hated by all of baseball because of that BS that John Boy was pushing about the buzzer, as if he was a worse cheater than everybody else on the Astros, when most accounts at least push the narrative that he was the one that didn't want any of the trash can banging. So there's that, but there's also, he did it against the A's. The A's are a poverty minor league franchise. Can we at the very least put Jose Altuve on the front page of ESPN when Julio Rodriguez is getting four hits against a Pacific Coast League AAA team? Is that so much to ask for? Like, that to me legitimately feels, Sean, like a bit of bias against Jose Altuve. It does.
Well, I mean, Seattle's just such a bigger media market than Houston, especially when you get Oakland in the mix. Like, who cares? Who cares about a game in Fenway Park? What has Fenway Park ever done?
You're right. It's against a Boston team that's in contention. He had the cycle, which is very rare, and there's no mention of it.
It's against, like, literally one of the, I don't know, what, three or four baseball teams that, like, get national coverage?
Yes! And a team that's in wild card contention. It's not in serious wild card contention.
They're theoretically,
but they're hanging around.
Theoretically in contention, yes.
And also, everyone hates Altuve, I thought. So ESPN just passing up on straight clickbait.
Yeah,
right,
that's
here.
That's why they talk about the Cowboys so much.
Yeah.
Is that everyone either loves them or hates them. How's that different than Altuve?
It's outrageous.
It's unfair?
Yes, it is. Thank you, Sean. Just like Anakin when he wasn't allowed into the Jedi Council. Jedi Council. Amateur hour.
What's more of a amateur, like rinky-dink amateur operation? Jedi Council, NCAA... Rod Manfred's MLB.
Jedi Council.
Yeah, I mean, they really messed it up.
There's literally, like, Space Hitler, Palpatine.
Down the hall.
He's, how do they not know this guy's clearly, like, Darth Vader? Or, excuse me, Darth Sidious. Like, oh, he has a hood on. We can't tell who he is, even though we're intercepting holograms of him. Oh, a person who keeps on taking power away from all the other senators? Oh, man, we don't get ourselves involved with politics. Bunch of Chamberlains. They deserve to die. Execute Order 66. Yeah, it was a good thing. The Jedi sucked. I said it.
Yeah.
Qui-Gon Jinn sucked.
So not only are you now belittling Jose Altuve's accomplishment, belittling Yoda, the two most beloved small figures in American culture.
Well,
no, not Altuve, and in Houston culture.
I've never seen Yoda kill a Sith Lord.
Facts. Do it in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Doing the playoffs.
Doing
Yoda.
Doing the big moment. Two draws. What are you? European soccer team?
One was a retreat, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Into exile I must go? You bitch.
Stand up. Be a man.
Screw Yoda.
Altuve, though, impressive.
I don't speak English the right way. Yeah.
The right way, I do not speak English. That's how you would actually say it.
NFL Countdown continues next. Is Tony Romo still somebody we like? I hope he brings this back. You'll hear it next. First, though, I got to tell you about my friends at Pendleton Whiskey. For more than a century, the Pendleton Roundup has defined what it means to be a cowboy. It gave life to something equally renowned, Pendleton Whiskey, which I am a big fan of. Been having this, it's a nice little wine down drink, plop an ice cube in there. It's really smooth, it's refreshing, and you can taste that Mount Hood Glacier water. It's made with the finest northern grains and captures the unique spirit of the Pendleton Roundup and the enduring legacy of the American West in every single bottle. It's a whiskey that celebrates the cowboy in all of us, including me, big-time cowboy right here. It's Pendleton Whiskey. It's true Western tradition.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Is it football season yet?
A tug of war. 22 nameless men grappling in the mud. They called it pro football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues on the Paul Gallant Show.
9 days away from the start of the NFL season, but we are the most interactive sports talk show in Houston, and there's not that much to react to football-wise today. A text saying what I'm saying. If a Yankee or Dodger hit for the cycle, ESPN would be pants tent city. Yeah, if Aaron Judge did this, even with the team playing like doo-doo butt, yes.
Or Mookie Betts, yeah.
I don't know if Mookie Betts would get that kind of love.
I was just doing the guy who's the face of the Yankees and the face of the Dodgers. Because that's the other thing. It's not just any... It's not like Mauricio Dubon hit for the cycle. It's Jose Altuve.
I think people are trying to make Julio Rodriguez into Ken Griffey Jr. 2.0. I would specifically point to the people of Seattle who I regularly see the takes of on my timeline since I still follow a bunch of those folks. I don't know that Mookie Betts is being put into that same superstar category. Because you know who he is, but... I don't know what it is.
He's going to win the MVP this year, more than likely. So that's the other thing. He's also playing well. I feel like I see a lot of Mookie Betts on my timeline.
Maybe this is because we follow the American League and not the National League. I don't know. I feel like Mookie Betts is not that big of a star in baseball, though. I think
no one in baseball is that big of a star, and he's one of the bigger
ones. I think he was a bigger deal when he was in Boston. I feel like...
Well, yeah, that's mostly just because his games would start at 7 o'clock Eastern time instead of 10 o'clock Eastern.
Fair point. That's the Caleb Williams predicament. A text. Someone brings up the weird stat of all the triples Evan Gattis got in that one season. Well, this allows me to talk about some comments on Twitch. So I guess Josh Beard made some comments about my forearms on the bench yesterday, which, okay, I got small forearms. Can't do anything about your forearms or calves, no matter how hard you try. You can make them slightly bigger. You can make them more defined if you're me, but I just can't put any meat on them. And I've regularly thought about Evan Gattis and how beefy those forearms were, and I was always thinking to myself, and I would say this on the air, and I know it probably made Evan Gattis uncomfortable, but I just want to take some of those forearms and do like a BBL for my forearms. And you know how Johnny Drama in Entourage, he gets calf implants? I want to get forearm implants.
I can maybe help you out. There has to be a calf. Or no, not calf.
Forearm implants?
Yeah.
But it would probably mess up your ability to use your fingers. It would probably F with your nerves. And the last thing in the world that anyone should want is for their hands to be effed up.
It looks like you can get them in both Los Angeles and New York.
How much?
I'm not saying.
Is this my next ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 endorsement? I start pushing forearm implants.
I have to call this number to set up a consultation.
Okay. This is something we'll get back to as we continue the Around the NFL segment. Someone asks the question. More difficult, a home run cycle or a perfect game with an immaculate inning? It's got to be the home run cycle. Only 18 people have hit 4 home runs in a game, ever. And then on top of that, you're saying hit a solo shot, a 2-run homer, a 3-run homer, and a grand slam. That has to be close to impossible. An immaculate inning, I almost expect it to happen along the way in a perfect game. Doesn't necessarily happen every single time, but anyway... 10-minute drill. We are 9 days away from the start of the NFL season. It has me thinking about Tony Romo, who a lot of people have soured on the broadcast. We need Tony Romo to get back to doing this like he did in the AFC Championship game.
Never touched him. That's a catch. We got to see this. Oh, that's loose. That is definitely...
And sustain it for the last 8.5. Here we go.
This is all one game. It was the Patriots Jaguars AFC Championship game before the Patriots played the Eagles in the Super Bowl.
So I kind of like the here we go. The here we go, Jim, is that one's fun. He can keep that one and the borderline erotic ones that
I want the Romo-gasms back. He seemed a little disinterested during the games of late, and I do not think he has been throwing high heat. The predictions did get old after a while. Far be it from me to say that somebody doesn't deserve Jim Nantz, but I think Romo has to earn his Nantz tie back. He has to earn it. And that the slurping is weird. Why is he slurping? Anyway, 9 days away from the start of the NFL season. Who do you remember more as number 9? Steve McNair, RIP, who was here at the Houston Oilers for a little bit of time, co-MVP in 03 with Peyton Manning, or Tony Romo? McNair's career, I think, was better. he did get a team to the Super Bowl. They were a yard away from winning it. I'm sure a lot of people were rooting very hard for the Rams in that game, for them to make the Super Bowl as quickly as they did after they changed their name from the Oilers to the Titans. I think it was the first year that they were the Titans. They actually made it all the way in. And I know they beat the Jaguars, who were 14-2, three times that season, twice in the regular season and once in the playoffs. McNair was fun. R.I.P. Other NFL stories. Did you see what Jonathan Gannon and the Arizona Cardinals are doing? Aren't you so glad that the Houston Texans have announced their starting quarterback, Sean? Because now there's only one team that hasn't announced a starting quarterback, and it's this guy.
Pew, 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 pew. I didn't have the soundboard ready.
Swoom, 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 shots.
So he just hasn't just decided, like, meh.
Here's what he said.
Need to see more.
He cited, quote, competitive advantage when saying why he will not announce if Joshua Dobbs or Clayton Tune, go Cougs, will start the season opener. Because they released Colt McCoy yesterday. Pour one out, by the way, for Colt McCoy. Because that might be it. If he can't make the roster with these two guys.
I saw that he's doing like a YouTube like video podcast that was like announced before he got cut.
Okay.
And I was like,
so he's already
he's
steering his way into the football afterlife.
When you start doing podcasts before you're retired, it's a little bit like a...
I wonder what he will focus on. Do you think he'll focus on the NFL or do you think he'll focus on UT?
I don't know.
What would you rather him talk about UT? Do you need more UT takes in your life, Sean?
Yeah, he could do the Longhorn Network. Well, no, actually, he can't do the Longhorn Network desk after this year. I honestly, whatever he wants to do, that's fine. He'll still go to, like, games and get a standing ovation. That's really all that he needs to do
okay. For
me to be satisfied. He can live his life. Do whatever he wants.
Live your life, man.
Yeah.
We have two stories before we wrap it up, and it's just a sign that we need the NFL season to start so we can talk about games. Anthony Richardson had this to say about expectations about him with the Indianapolis Colts in his first season. Everyone wants me to come here and win a Super Bowl my first year. I don't think anybody thinks that's possible. I don't think anybody thinks it's possible.
No, but they want him to.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like Margot Robbie in studio right now. Or Tom Brady. I don't know. Maybe
the best I can do is Josh Beard. I'm sorry. Andrew Carls?
Nah.
Okay.
Nah, that's a bummer. Man. They're not in studio. They're not hanging out waiting for the show to start?
No.
Also, Dalvin Cook had this to say about the Jets Super Bowl hopes. Very realistic. They've been saying that for 50 years. So, good luck. Paul Gawant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 to call in. To text in as well. Coming up next, we're at roster cut day for your beloved Houston Texans. I was more intrigued by a guy the Texans won't cut anytime soon, but might cut down the road. Whom I'm talking about, you'll find out next.
ESPN 97.5 on FM radio. AM is stupid.
Got him.
610, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here is your ambiguously gay host, Paul Gallant.
Never touched him. That's a catch. We got to see this. Oh, that's loose. That is definitely. Oh.
It's the slurping at the end. I think some of the Cougs that were listening to our last segment might have been, I don't know, making noises like that, hearing that Clayton Tune, fifth round pick of our beloved Cougs, beat out Colt McCoy. Is that a sign of things to come this year? Is UH going to beat UT? Greg Todd commented, go Cougs. King of all Twitches commented, a Coug beat out a horn. See how that works. I think that was innuendo that I didn't really think about until I read it. Look, Sean, I mean, we got nothing to lose this year. You know, the big match between the Cougs and UT, we got nothing to lose. You got a lot to lose. Could be 0-2 against the Cougs this year.
Oh, we're counting Clayton Toon beating out a 40-year-old man.
That's a win.
A 40-year-old journeyman backup quarterback to be the backup quarterback for the worst team in the league.
McCoy couldn't make it through a national championship against Alabama. Couldn't beat out a Coug to be the starting quarterback. Well, that's because
a week two national championship.
It's because of the bias. You know,
that was a dirty hit. Both of them dirty hits.
The anti Third Coast bias. Everyone knows the Cougs should have made the college football playoff
in 2009.
Well, yeah, I think. Wait, the time they beat Lamar Jackson, they should have made it for beating Lamar Jackson.
Were they like 9-3 that year?
Shh, it's fine.
They lost to like Navy.
Navy. They lost to
Navy and like SMU or whatever. They beat all the good teams. They lost to all the crappy teams. Wow, that sounds
like
Tom Herman.
You're diminishing the military.
That sounds like Tom Herman.
You are diminishing the military here, sir. You know, fine. Oh, the Navy's soft. They're not good at football.
They're not good at football. I watched them on Saturday.
It's just because of that clock, man. It's because of all the clock not stopping after first down. It's naturally going to stop a triple option offense.
They can't tell.
You hate our armed forces. It's
okay.
They
can't tell if it's 0400 hours yet because the clock is stopping.
Because it's a doublet, too. Yeah, it was tricky. Another text in. All the Romosexuals are off the bandwagon. We have a caller. Eric wants to talk about Tony Romo, who we're 9 days away from the start of the NFL season, and I just wanted to play that audio. Eric, what's up?
Yeah, Tony Romo is one of the best announcers out there. He's better than all these other Wahoos. The only one that's better is the King, Gus Johnson.
Oh, I love Gus. So you still like Romo?
Back better Stephon this year. Yeah, he's one of the best. I'd rather take him than Joe Buck.
But they do different jobs. We got to compare Romo to color commentators, not to Gus Johnson and not to Joe Buck.
Well, he's better than Troy Aikman. You know that.
I actually disagree with that. I think Aikman's really good at that.
Aikman's gotten better like the last 2 years.
Yeah, Aikman criticizes. I got to be honest, Eric. I like Romo's energy, but I don't think the attention to detail is where it was a couple of years ago.
Well, you know, I like Tony Romo. I think he's fabulous. He called up the plays before. You know, you see him. I like that.
Okay.
I think he's better than Jason Witten. Well,
everybody's better than Jason. That's a low bar. But Eric, we appreciate the phone call. Eric is a proud Romosexual. There's nothing wrong with being a Romosexual. Nothing wrong with it. But it's we don't kink shame here, but it's not our cup of tea.
I think the praise whenever he started, what it was like 2017, was
great point.
Was like it was aggressive.
He was asking for pushback.
And then now I feel like the pushback is too far, too. Like Eric brought up, like, the NFL broadcasters, they're not exactly, like, chopped full of, like, stone-cold killers where it comes to, like the color commentary that is on these games. Like, they're not all, you know, Kirk Herbstreit did Amazon broadcast for an entire year.
I'm about to tell you something really deep, Sean.
I know.
Life?
It's a pendulum.
Can you do that into the microphone? So,
life is a pendulum.
Okay,
did you hear me that time?
I heard
a pendulum motion. Twitch.tv/ESPN.
I could also tell your arm. I could tell by your arm, but I think the listening masses could not make it out.
Sometimes I get a little Italian when I talk. You know, I identify as Italian. I'm very handsy.
You did stand
not
up.
Not like Cuomo handsy. I'm just a little handsy. Just a little handsy. All right. Hey, speaking of handsy, D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio.
What are you accusing these men
had
of?
Their hands.
Oh, okay.
On pink slips yesterday. Damn, I'm good. Because it's cut day. Shots left. It was terrible, wasn't it?
Pink slips. they had their hands all over pink slips and they're handing them out.
You're fired. And you're fired.
It makes it seem like they're having fun with it.
And I don't think they were. I'm curious as to how D'Amico Ryans handles that. I actually enjoyed that part of Hard Knocks. They don't do this, I think, as much, though. I didn't watch the last episode of Hard Knocks. I guess the most recent episode comes out tonight, and we'll probably see some cuts made. I thought that Bill O'Brien was very good at handling cuts. I liked that he was actually direct with them on that Hard Knocks season in 2015 and told them what was up. Here's D'Amico Ryans talking about what he and Nick Caserio have to do by the close of business today.
Much work those guys put in for us. I don't take that lightly. That guy's done a great job of what we asked him to do, asked him to work hard each and every day. Our guys did that. They didn't complain. They just worked. So it's a hard day. Over the next couple of days, it'll be a hard few days, right, having to let guys go because I know the work that these men have put in.
There's something that has got to be difficult on that front, especially now that you're the head coach of the team. You've played this game before, and you are the one doing it. Like, that cannot be easy, truly. That's got to be very hard. But he's going to have to get used to it. And the cuts that we know about thus far, Roy Lopez, the first Nick Caserio draft pick to be cut, he is no longer a part of the team, defensive lineman. Desmond King also was released. And Christian Kirksey, who was not good at middle linebacker last season. And I got to say, Christian Kirksey being cut and some of the reaction to that, we got to talk about something here. The statistic tackle in the NFL is a very overrated statistic. And it constantly gets used to make certain players who maybe aren't what they used to be. I would point to Bobby Wagner over the last couple of years. People will look at the tackle numbers and then they'll give a linebacker first team all pro, sometimes because of the tackles. And we're talking about people that actually pay attention to football. And there's a lot of other people too who will say, oh, well, a guy had a lot of tackles. I saw a really dumb interaction in response to this Christian Kirksey news. Some guy said, wow, he was a big factor in that defense last year. Someone responded saying, no, the bleep, he wasn't. This dummy said, he had over 120 tackles last year. What do you mean? And then people started getting into the solo tackles and the assisted tackles. Shut up about tackles. Guys, you know how I made first team all district playing high school football? Because I had a bunch of tackles as a safety. I'm not even kidding. I had a lot of tackles. It's not a true reflection of how much of a difference maker you are. I'm admitting that. Like, I know I wasn't that good. I am proud that I played high school football. I know I wasn't that good. Yes, of course I made this segment about myself in some way, shape, or form. But to go back to the original point, we got to come up with a different way to measure tackles. I know that there's stuffs. There's tackle for a loss. But we got to figure out a way to gauge how the tackle was made. Did he push the other guy back? We got to gauge, because Christian Harris, I guess his stopping power on a tackle, that guy lights people up. A tackle by him is a little bit different than a tackle by a defensive back or a safety. Jalen Petrie had a bunch of tackles last year, but that didn't really seem to measure the amount of missed tackles he had. It's a weird statistic that people use in totality to support an argument for a player that actually isn't good. And Christian Kirksey is an example of that. If you watched the games last year, Kirksey was just slow. And I mean, nothing against him, man. Like, some people are built for an NFL from 10, 20 years ago. Maybe Kirksey would have been good back then. But in the league where you got to cover and you got to fly around and where you're not blowing through the gaps and taking people down in the backfield, like, no, that you don't have a place here.
Yeah, that is like where the tackling, like the tackle as a stat, like, kind of doesn't tell the whole story, because what Christian Kirksey, like, got cut for and why he was, I do agree that he was a factor on last year's Texans defense. Not
a good one.
Not a good one, though. It's about the tackles that you don't make, the tackles that you aren't even in position to make, the coverages that you can't tackle
the blocks
someone
you don't take up. Right. It's a lot of different things. I would specifically point to that with linebackers. So if you're not grading coverage and you're making a tackle after a catch was made right in front of you and you get dragged for another 2 yards.
Yeah.
Like, there should be some sort of statistic that punishes you for that.
Yards after contact, but for defense, where it's like, how many extra yards are you giving up?
It's almost like yards after the line of scrimmage. And we have the GPSs to do this. So you could theoretically have some sort of advanced statistic with Amazon or something like that that would point out where the tackle is made. And I'd also point to you, too, like guys who occupy blocks, who do a good job of at least just physically putting themselves
like
in
the
a spot.
Nose tackles, that kind of thing.
Well, not just nose tackles, but you're right. Like, nose tackles are the best example of that, Sean. But some linebackers are really good at blasting through a gap and just occupying space and forcing a running back or somebody else to go in a different direction.
And letting someone else make the play.
Exactly, and they don't get any credit for it. And, I mean, that would be a really difficult thing to measure, but tackles as a statistic are so misleading, and I feel like not enough people talk about that. They don't. It is the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. The Astros won by scoring a lot of runs again last night. Is that something they're going to be capable of doing on a regular basis in the playoffs, assuming they make it, after last night's 13-4 victory? You answer that on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sweet Sassy Molassie.
Sweet Sassy Molassie. Get out the checkbook and pay grandma for the rubdown as the Spurs beat the Heat